meeting is now being recorded.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to the new GTLD Subsequent Procedure Subteam Track 1 Overall Process Support Outreach Issue on Tuesday, the 5th of December, 2017. In the interest of time, there will be no roll call. Attendance will be taken by the Adobe Connect room. If you're only on the audio bridge, could you please let yourselves be known now? Hearing no names, I would like to remind all to please state your name before speaking for recording purpose, and to please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I'll turn it back over to our co-chair, Krista Taylor. Please begin.
Thank you, and good morning to everyone. Sarah has another meeting or a conflict for today, so I'll be leading us through today's call. Thank you again for everyone for joining us. Just to kind of kick things off, we'll do the usual check to see if anyone has any updates to their SOI. And if so, would they like to let us know now? Seeing no hands, I'll jump into the agenda, but if something arises, feel free to add it to the chat or raise your hand. As you can see on the slide, the second slide, today we'll be discussing our timeline and also some of the recommendations around the applicant support and the AGB. Are there any other, along with any other business, is there any other business that we would or anyone would like to add to the agenda? Seeing no comments or no hands, I'll assume not at this time, but if anything arises during the meeting, I'll make sure that we come back to it at the end. So jumping into the first topic, which is the timeline. Sorry, the slide just disappeared on me. So I'll talk for a minute and hopefully the PowerPoint will, Steve's updating, thank you. So jumping into the timeline, which is on slide three, we're currently obviously in December, and we're going to be working on completing the, making more some more progress on the deliberations from the work group. And we're going to begin today the review of the recommendations of two subjects, and then we'll address other areas that need further work and clarification. And the idea is that for January to February, we'll complete the review of all the work track recommendations. And in March, all the recommendations will be taken to the full working group. So there's actually quite a bit, and once you actually get into the actual different topics, we'll probably arise with some more questions and some more deliberations and some more ideas. So I thought we'd take a good idea to take a little bit of a step back. So the AGB, initially there were the questions and concerns that were brought to us. I'm not going to read this all out because I'm sure I'll put everyone to sleep first thing in the morning. But the book was part of the deliberations. It was to develop a singular document that was intended to support the program. And everyone knew it was foreseeable that there would be sections that would be less relevant to certain parties than others. And it was provided the requirements to be considered by the all different types of perspectives, including applicants, consultants, back-end providers, registrars, right holders, governments, and other interested parties in the program. So moving right along, I have a bit of echo there, I'm not sure why. Some members of the working group suggested, or some of the review panel suggested that partitioning the AGB in distinct audience-driven sections and believing that it would improve readability and understandability of rules. Others suggested the AGB could be made more process-driven and providing step-by-step instructions. Still, given others' Still, others even suggested the AGB was the wrong vehicle for implementation of the policy entirely, although no alternative was suggested. So we kind of, that was our starting point for this. And let me just go through some of the rationale that was provided to us. And it was just, it was pretty straightforward. They didn't really anticipate much policy development work in regards to the applicant guidebook. And although it could be necessary that there's a broad support for an alternative vehicle for implementation of the new GTLD policy, and the working group may wanted to consider providing guidance, particularly around the structure of the AGB, for consideration by ICANN in developing the next version of it or through modifications to it. And obviously, it would be more, it was presumed to remain an iterative community inclusive process. So that's kind of the background on it. And then reviewing the recommendations so far, we don't have a whole lot, and the changes are pretty, are relatively minor, and they're more surrounding implementation. So some of the recommendations to date have been to reduce the amount of background and the rationale and move that to appendices. For instance, it should be less historical, less of, you know, a policy approach and a buildup of the background. Create a practical guide that can be used in applying for a TLD. For instance, improve the table of contents along with the index, and making the document easier to find relevant information to search. And item number four was one of the things that we need some feedback on. Sorry, I'm having some feedback, so I'm not sure who is also not muted their mic. But if they could mute it, it'd be appreciated. Item number four was, sorry, as I was just saying, step-by-step, possibly an app by type of application. So we did have some discussion on this earlier about subdividing the applicant guidebook into audience-driven sections. And I'm not sure if we would like to make that part of the recommendations or not, but I would really appreciate, or I think everyone, any kind of feedback or insight on there would be great. So please. Jim, please go ahead. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Krista. Jim Printer. I guess I'm just trying to understand the question a little better, and that is, would it be like, okay, if you're a dot brand applicant, here's your section of the guidebook. If you're a generic applicant, here's yours. If you're a community, here's yours. Is that sort of what the thinking is?
Exactly.
Okay. I think this is Jim again.
Go ahead.
I would say it probably makes sense from a clarity standpoint, but it's one of those things you probably have to see in order to really figure out if it works or not. But I don't see any harm sort of going down that path.
Great. Thanks. Donna, please go ahead.
Thanks, Krista. Donna Austin from Newstar. So I would think from a overall perspective that you are going to need just the one document that's got everything in it. I assume that's going to be, a digital version. I don't think there were too many printed copies of the applicant guidebook, but it has to be easily searchable. So to Jeff's point that, if you're a back-end operator, then here are the sections you need to pay attention to. There could be some kind of reader's guide with it, but I would think that from, an ICANN and due diligence perspective, that there has to be the complete version available for ICANN to start directing applicants to different bits. It could get them into some hot water. So maybe, if it is going to be an online version, then make sure that it's, easily searchable.
Thanks, Donna. Yeah, I think that is the idea. The question is more of a, do we want the audience-driven sections with it as well? So if we, as just Jim suggested, with the, is it, here's one section, or here's the work-through for a brand. Here's another section for an open applicant that, like, through the normal process. And having each of those sections specifically addressed to the type of applicant. Jim, is that an old hand or a new hand? Old hand. Okay. I'm just reading some of the chat here. Does the PDF prevent sudden changes of the AGB during the process? And Justine Chu says, or consider inserting tags for different categories of type of audience bot, of type of audience by type of applicant, sorry. And Maxime also says, the approach would require rewriting multiple parts of the document in case of similar changes. Sorry. Greg, please go ahead.
Thanks. Greg Shatton, for the record. It seems to me, and maybe I'm just stating the obvious, that there will be a lot of sections of the AGB that are generic, that apply to all types of applicants, and then there will be some parts that apply only to certain types of applicants. At this point, we're just kind of talking, I guess, about structure. And, you know, I think that we're kind of still stuck in kind of a print mentality, interestingly enough, for an internet-centric organization. But in any case, you know, it seems to me that, you know, clearly addressing those parts that are only intended for a particular subset of the audience to that audience is only kind of common sense, and that they should be appropriately tagged, but that ultimately the omnibus edition of the AGB that includes, you know, all subparts relevant or irrelevant to a particular audience is, that is kind of the entirety, and that should be the entirety for search purposes and for definition of what is the AGB. You know, if a part of the AGB doesn't apply to you, then you can know that, but it doesn't mean that that part shouldn't be accessible to you, and vice versa. There's no reason not to identify parts that only apply to certain types of apps. You know, in the end, it's kind of like an orchestral score with parts. The score includes every part, but if you're the baritone sax player, or the bassoonist, there's no Barry Sax in an orchestra, you know, the bassoon part is the one that you pay attention to, but you better know what everybody else is listening to as well. You know, I don't think there's anything really all that controversial here. It's a fairly ministerial level of discussion in my mind. Thank you.
Thanks, Greg. Well said. Alan, please go ahead.
Thank you. I think I support what Greg is saying, that is, each section should be tagged as to who it applies to. If you're looking at an online version, then maybe it only shows you the sections that are applicable to you. But we certainly would, in my mind anyway, would not want to have a whole dedicated section saying that if you are a brand, this is your app, this is your AGB, because that means replicating things. And anytime you replicate things, you'll end up with things out of sync. So maybe the online version is tailorable to only display or ask the appropriate questions. But I would strongly recommend we not try to tailor the AGB in a printed form to have essentially replicated sections. Now, there may be a print command which says only print the sections that apply to me, essentially equivalent to what I said for online, but under no conditions I think would we want to replicate things and have completely tailored sections that only apply to one class of applicant. Thank you.
And I think it's kind of like choose your own adventure book. So it should also be like that. Jeff, please go ahead.
Yeah, I think, and I know this is, many people are kind of questioning, going, why are we talking about so many of the administrative stuff? Well, we're subsequent procedures. Procedures involve administration. So I don't think people are talking about replicating. I don't think people are talking about, you know, I'm thinking like lawyers here. Yes, okay, nobody disagrees that we need to have one omnibus version of the official. This is the one for legal purposes you always point to as the full version. But I think going back to the recommendation of making this process more accessible, especially to non-native speakers and to others, you know, to get more people involved into the process, to stop having it only be for ICANN insiders that, you know the lingo. We should be encouraging many different types of tools, if you want to word it that way, to recommendation, the policy recommendation could be we should support tools to enhance the accessibility of the applicant guidebook, including online versions or whatever it is, to enhance this process, especially for those that are not insiders and for those that are not living this day to day. And part of that would be, you know, here's a guide for, you know, if you want to apply for a brand top level domain, here's a guide. So I think that's kind of the recommendations we're making and kind of pulling it out as to why we're being, quote, administrative. It's really for the policy recommendation of making this process more accessible to the non-insiders. Thanks.
Thanks, Jeff. Any more comments? I'm just trying to read a little bit underneath at the same time. Okay, so I think I got the feedback that we do want that, and I'll add it to the rest of it, and we'll start working on that further. So going into the next topic, I was going to go into kind of the history, and I never had the chance, and it's pretty long, but we'll jump into applicant support. And this one is a little bit of a tougher topic for, I think, us, but just to give some background, the initial, the background was, it was to increase, in an effort to increase global diversity and representation across regions within the new GTLD program, the ICANN community developed the applicant support program. And it sought to provide financial and non-financial support to applicants from developing countries, thereby reducing competitive disadvantages that may prevent them from participating in the new GTLD program. The applicant support program is also in support of implementation guideline N, which states ICANN may put in place a fee reduction scheme for GTLD applicants from economies classified by the UN as least developed. And so I thought this was actually useful because we've never really discussed whether we've discussed the middle applicant, but we never really addressed whether we like the idea of the UN definition. So as of June 2017, this is the list of least developed countries in the UN. And I'm not sure if we would consider these the middle applicant countries, and just to note that I think it was also earlier this year that Botswana, the Maldives, Cabo Verde, Samoa, and Equatorial Guinea, I'm not sure where that is, graduated from being a least developed country and is no longer off on that list. So if we're limited to the allowing applicants from UN least developed countries, we need to change that if we only want these countries, or if we're considering the middle applicant to be a different level of applicant, in which case we would need to change the policy surrounding this. and going back into a little bit more the background. So I'm sure we're all quite aware of all this, but just as a rehash. So initially, the financial support reduced the application fee from $185,000 to $47,000. And I'm not sure if that would mean in the future the application fee goes down, whether or not that application or applicant support fee would also be reduced. So, for instance, the 47 of 185 is 25%. So I'm not sure if we should assume that 25% of the full application fee would be the applicant support or not, and would we want to add any kind of policy around that? Secondly, some pro bono services via the applicant support directory, which was created to connect potential applicants who wish to establish new public interest GTLD registries in the community for either financial or non-financial assistance, and that there was a funding mechanism which received $2 million in seed funding. And so we were brought the following questions and concerns. So out of the 1,913 applications received, only 3 applied for financial assistance, and with only 1 meeting that criteria. The DG members were concerned with the lack of usage of the program and identified a number of possible reasons that may have contributed to the limited number of applications. They are: the measures introduced to prevent gaming of the ASP may have discouraged possible applicants. Secondly, there was a short trajectory from the Jazz Working Group final report into the implementation of the recommendations and the launch of the new GTLD program, inclusive of the ASP. Thirdly, the lack of otherwise inadequate outreach efforts for the ASP. And finally, the lack of financial support beyond the application fee reduction for other aspects of the program, like objections, string contention resolution, post-delegation operations, and other expenses associated with running a new or a GTLD registry. Some other comments were, or suggestions also included, improving the outreach for the ASP, in general, for including the developing countries, creating a round dedicated to applicants only from developing countries, which is discussed in another section, and then making the assistance more comprehensible so that it extends beyond the application fee reduction. And again, it's kind of a little bit of rehash from just what I went through on the 1,930 applicants. But one of the ideas was a possible PDP working group may seek data in understanding why usage was limited, as it may help inform the development of any other updated solutions, and consider identifying success criteria for the program related to communications, funds made available, usage of the program, and other factors. The rationale. And sorry, I think this is useful just to kind of go back from where we started, was that it would include identifying, recommending support mechanisms, evaluation criteria, clear objectives, success criteria, and other elements. And then finally, the ASP was identified in the ICANN board guidance on input, on initial input on areas for possible policy work, which is why we're all here. So to date, now kind of getting into where we are in what we've created to date, there's a variety of slides here, so I'll go through them first and make sure that nothing's left out before we kind of get into the discussions. So the policy recommendation, one of the first ones was to provide a process to transition to the regular application track. So if an applicant did not qualify or they were eliminated from the entire application round, instead of being given the opportunity to raise additional funds and complete the application process via the regular process. ASPs who did not qualify also risk losing their deposit and their application. So we haven't addressed whether or not they, somebody who perhaps is gaming the system, risks losing their deposit and how we would like to treat that or if we'd like to just leave it as it is. But the other aspects are, or we've concluded is we need to allow applicants the opportunity to transition to the regular application track if they don't qualify for applicant support. And secondly, except that some may try to game the system but need to make the system more approachable for those who need it. Risk can be reduced by penalizing those who do try to game the system. Next, we wanted to improve the promotional efforts, so improve outreach in general in developing countries. Again, we're also mentioning developing countries here and not the middle applicant. Engage with the CC, NSO, GAC, ALAC on how to create awareness and education in such regions. It was to expand training and awareness opportunities, inclusion of the applicant support program, and all promotional activities related to new GTLD applications. Next, be present in potential markets. And some of the comments were we can't just show up once or twice and attain the same level of attraction that we require. And it may require, it takes time to build presence, and therefore we're going to need to spend multiple cycles in gaining that kind of traction. We also, some other feedback was to find suitable partners with relevant global reach to deliver the message to appropriate audiences. For instance, the internet, variety of Internet Society chapters, global university networks who have numerous international campuses and programs, or aid organizations that specialize in technology and communications in underserved markets. And to implement the, so our recommendation is to implement appropriate training programs for developing locally situated registries and registrars that will address and support the needs of potential businesses, educational and social entrepreneurial LDC end users. Also to compare volume of users, or compare the volume to users of domain names registered in regional TLDs. So identify the number of domain names registered in regional new GTLDs compared with the number of internet users in the related regions, and then compare with the same numbers in regions like Europe and North America. So this is a way that we can figure out which areas to target. Additionally, we wanted to we came up with the idea to utilize partnerships to maximize outreach. So in North America, companies are going into regions to carry out the studies is a bit of a hurdle and undermines the program's potential. So ICANN may need to remove itself from promoting outreach to underdeveloped areas and have other parties do these activities. They may need to partner with organizations in potential regions before taking further actions. And developmental entities and agencies could be helpful, i.e. initiatives funded by multilateral agencies and promoting access to economies. Hopefully everyone's not asleep yet. Getting there. Next one is to provide support beyond reduced application fees. And we've spent quite a bit of time on this, but it needs just to be going reducing the fee. Needs to go into other aspects of the program. So, other parts of the program, including the actual, running of a registry. For instance, back-end registry services, escrow services, marketing and sales, And some of the recommendations are focus on application process and assisting those who want to apply. Support their applications through the entire process and facilitate introductions and engagement with RSPs that are willing to support discounted services for ASP participants. Additionally, strong support for mentorship and continued support to be built into the support program, including knowledgeable technical and managerial personnel, followed by provide support, not just commitment, not just to committed applicants, but also to groups and considering evaluating whether to apply. Provide the tools to help them evaluate their idea and potential and its potential before looking for support. And finally, some of the kind of the big taking a step back, I rewrote this, and obviously it's not in this version, but money isn't necessarily the biggest obstacle. So technical support needs to assistance around the process of having or providing support to applicant support around technical support. Additionally, technical competence of the applicant is also important. They need to understand what is entailed. Evaluation, the total cost of ownership, i.e. Attorney's fees and maintenance, needs to be considered. Need a mechanism to provide support for processing applications and advise on how to develop a TLD and how to develop a particular market for a TLD. Additionally, TLDs that link to an identity, higher chance of not competing with others and likely to succeed in a community or a region. Where the biggest problems in a region and how they can TLD can help overcome the obstacles, and where basic infrastructure reliable access continues to be a challenge, ICANN must accept that existing availability of TLDs, for instance, the CC TLDs and existing gTLDs, may be sufficient in regions where resources may be effectively utilized in critical local internet infrastructure. So those are the ideas that have been presented to date. And I'm just trying to read some of the chat at the same line. So if anyone has any ideas or would like to add anything on what we've come up to date, that would be great. As I mentioned earlier, one of the aspects that was kind of that I don't know if we've really covered would we like to write any recommendations around success metrics or evaluation criteria or other elements along with any suggestions around the middle applicant. So kind of going back to where I started in this with the definition of the UN countries and whether or not we're okay with that. So maybe that could be my first question to everyone, and try to get some feedback on that. So here's the list of the UN countries. Do we think that this applicant support should be focused on these countries alone? Thanks, Jeff. Sorry, I'm getting tongue-tied. Greg, please.
Hi, it's Greg Shatton for the record. I have some concerns about limiting it only to applicants from the least developed economies without concern either for the economic position of the individual applicant if they come from that country or one of those countries, or if they come from some other country. I would analogize this to the ICANN Fellowship Program, which for a number of years was only available to those, I believe, from less developed countries. I don't remember the exact criterion, but that was roughly what it was. Lately it has been opened up to applicants from any country as long as they individually meet certain criteria. And I would suggest the same here. In a sense, it is discriminating against those who are from less affluent communities in more affluent countries, which would include, sadly, most or many indigenous communities, and as well as other communities that socioeconomically may be less advantaged, but collectively, should at least be offered the opportunity. I think this also goes to the issue that application fee is only the tip of the iceberg, because enabling somebody to save $100,000 in order to apply for a project that's going to cost hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars over the course of X number of years is kind of like fronting somebody the down payment for a car they can't afford. We need to do more than that. But, sticking to the question at hand, I think we need to use a less blunt instrument rather than citizenship and go to something that gives applicants support who would not otherwise be able to consider this as seriously, regardless of where they come from in terms of country. Thank you.
Thanks, Greg. Well said, and I really like your discriminating communities in affluent countries aspect. Alan, please go ahead.
Thank you. I tend to agree with Greg. We certainly do not want to restrict it to only the least developed countries. I mean, at some level, it's the ones in between that are more likely to be the good candidates. But I think means has to be a criteria, not just where you live. Aside from anything else, just location allows you the whole process to be gamed at a level which I don't think we would want. So, yes, I believe we need a means test. Location may be relevant, although I really would prefer not to see the location. As Greg says, the fellowship has demonstrated that we can have very disadvantaged communities in the midst of the most wealthy countries, and I think we're missing the opportunity if we do that. I'm worried, though, that we are sticking to the pattern that was talked about in the first round, and do we really want to look at primarily, I know there's other things later on, but I think we have to front and center tackle the issue of, is reducing the application fee going to be sufficient, or do we have to look at ongoing fees if we're really looking at disadvantaged areas? It's not just the applicant that's disadvantaged, it's also the people who are going to be perhaps using it, and I think we have to look at some of those questions. I have one question, however, that maybe the answer is obvious, but I don't remember it. Where did the $2 million come from? Last time, my recollection is it was put up by the board out of ICANN funds and did not necessarily, if it had been used, I don't think it would have been a draw against the other applicants' fees. So I think we need to address the issue of, if we reduce the fees, does this come at the cost of someone else paying, more than their share, essentially? Or is there a separate pot of money? And if there's a separate pot of money, under whose discretion is that going to be allocated? I don't think that's ours. Thank you.
Thanks. I don't actually have that answer. Maybe Steve or Emily can help me out on pulling that quickly. Just tying it into our other conversations on cost, though, that was one of the categories that any difference between the floor and the application fee was one of the categories that money could be used for. Jeff, please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. To address that last question first, there was a board resolution that came up with the $2 million fund, and I think, as some people have mentioned on the comments, I think that was figured into the, quote, historical costs, or, you know, so it was indirectly paid for by the other applicants as the historical costs, but you're right, we should do the more research on that. And then getting back to Greg's comment on focusing on the applicant as opposed to focusing on, you know, where the applicant resides, or sorry, the needs of the applicant as opposed to where they reside. I guess the only question we would need to figure out is if there's a limited fund available for helping out these applications, how decisions are ultimately made with that scarcity of resources. So if there are applicants, unlike this last time, let's say there are a number of applicants that meet the criteria, but there's only a limited amount of funds, how are decisions made to pick the, quote, winners and losers from that fund? So I think it sounds like from the comments in this group and others, you know, they agree with the notion of, you know, not necessarily limiting it to the residents of the applicant, but we still need a mechanism to choose between applicants if there is more applicants that meet the criteria than the funds available. Thanks.
Thanks, Jeff. Great comment. Donna, please go ahead.
Thanks, Krista. Donna Ostrom from Newstart. So I just want to pick up on something that Alan said about, you know, is this about reducing the application fee and the ongoing fee, and where does that money come from? I wonder if there's another way to think about this, and it also goes a little bit back to Greg's comment about the fellowship program. If you identified five projects that could become TLDs from ICANN's five regions that, you know, perhaps the GSE team does a lot of work in different regions about trying to get people, you know, up to speed with what ICANN does and how the business works and that kind of thing. And I know that there was there's been quite a bit of work done in the Middle East. When ARI, Oz Registry Services, had the string .shabaka, which was .web in Arabic. You know, there was ARI had the expertise to take that forward because, you know, they've done a lot of work in the Middle East. But the reality was that there was no market for that at that time. So that's an important consideration if you're going to try to have a viable business within some of these markets or areas. So I wonder, sorry, if there's a better way to approach this by saying that there are there's a potential for five applicants to be free and clear. So no application fee and perhaps no fee, ongoing fees in the first 12 months. But in order to be, I'm really sorry, eligible for that, then they have to make a business case for how they can make that work. And perhaps, you know, going to some of these things about having an RSP on your side and things like that, having those conversations so that you build expertise in-house over that 12-month period so that at the end of the day you can be standalone. So I just wonder if we can look at this from a slightly different perspective and perhaps we need to, maybe that means moving it a little bit outside of the AGB stuff and try to ensure that, you know, you're building expertise within the area, but it, at the end of the day, it's a viable proposition, because we don't really want something that, you know, it sounds like a good idea, but it's going to fall over after 12 months because there's no, you know, they didn't really have the expertise they needed to take it forward. So I just wonder if there's another way that we can think about this. Thanks, Krista.
Thanks, Donna. It sounds like you have a horrible cold. One of the recommendations that we did have was to provide tools to evaluate their idea and its potential separate from the application process. So I think perhaps I didn't highlight that sufficient, in that before anyone even begins the process, they should have these tools to evaluate everything and then decide if they want to go forward in the application support, the application and the application for support. So that could be one of the other aspects that kind of helps out there, but there seems to be a lot around the fees, and the other aspect of it, to launch a TLD, there's a lot of funds that go into this, as everyone has already mentioned. So I don't know if we can say or suggest something around ongoing ICANN funds, but is that something we would like to add, assuming we can? Oh, sorry, Steve, I didn't see your hand raised, so please go ahead.
No problem, Krista. Thanks. This is Steve Chan from staff. And I actually just wanted to remind folks that part of the things that we should consider overall for the working group and then for this particular subject is the report, and I know it's in draft form still, but the Competition, Consumer Trust, and Consumer Choice Review Team report. Here's a link to their current draft, which is out for public comment. I think they're specifically seeking comment on three essentially delta sections, but there still are the remaining, or I guess largely unchanged recommendations applied to or applicable to applicant support. I think in many respects, we're already sort of touching on the things that they wanted us to touch on, but one of the things that they mention is the Global South and defining the Global South. So it seemed at least that they envision the location being a factor in the process. And so maybe that's one way that you could consider the location aspect of that. It's not necessarily determinative, but it's maybe one factor that could play into the evaluation process. So there's that, and then also just the general plug that a reminder for all of us that we need to make sure we consider the CCTRT report. Thanks.
Thanks, Steve. And yes, Greg, please go ahead.
Thanks, Greg Chatton. Two things. One, to respond on the issue of location. And I have to admit, I haven't read that part of the CCTRT report yet. I think, you know, location, again, is something that needs to be looked at in a more nuanced way. In the last few days, there was an article in the New York Times about how high-speed internet access, multi-gigabit access, is being brought to a remote community in northern Alaska because of basically a transpolar undersea cable. On the one hand, that's a remote community in northern Alaska. On the other hand, it's part of the United States, just like Park Avenue in Beverly Hills. So if you take a blunt instrument view of location, that location is off the list. And if you take a more nuanced view of location, it's on the list. Or my wife works in the South Bronx, one of the poorest congressional districts in the entire country. 15% of people graduate from high school. Yet it's right next to Manhattan, one of the richest districts in the country. If there was somebody wanted to develop a South Bronx and was a community organization and had, or let's put aside the issue of community, because that's a whole other rabbit hole. But let's say it was a grassroots
thing and not, say, Michael Bloomberg? Why is that good or bad? And again, indigenous peoples, you know, does it matter whether they're on the res or located in a city? I don't know. I think we have to location can be a factor, but it should not be the factor. We need to be more thoughtful. And then for the thing that I actually raised my hand about, I'm not a venture capitalist, obviously, but I sometimes do work in that with people in that area. And it seems to me in the idea of going beyond just paying people's application fees in part, and this may be a very ambitious way to look at it, what we really need in terms of continuing support for a potential applicant and new applicant is something along the lines of an incubator or accelerator, where we would provide both financial support and business support, and where there would be a process by which those who are admitted are chosen, which, you know, long story very short, boils down to whether they're going to be successful in achieving the goals that were put forth in the beginning. There could be more than one definition of success, of course, but clearly if the basic idea is selling domains to third parties, that's a fairly basic definition of success or failure. So I don't know if anybody feels like putting together a new TLD incubator or accelerator for less advantaged applicants, but that's my suggestion in a nutshell. Thanks.
Great. Thanks, Greg. Just trying to read some of the chat here. Great point. Varying degrees of success. Okay. So it sounds like everyone thinks that we should change the policy around just UN-classified countries as least developed. So if anyone is thinks that we should restrain it to just that, and why, perhaps, Jeff, please go ahead.
Thanks, Jeff Newman. I'm not saying that I don't believe we should keep it at just that in the UN. I'm just trying to say that if at the end of the day we need to make decisions based on scarce resources available for the program, that there needs to be a mechanism to determine of the qualified applicants who can actually get support. So I don't want to lose that.
Awesome. Not lost, and I have made a note of it. So if anyone has any ideas now, please. If not, I think what the plan is, we'll kind of circle back and add more to it and perhaps share it on the list with everyone so we can kind of develop some more ideas around that, along with I guess the already kind of have a definition of a middle applicant, so I'll be sure to insert that. The other question I have is, do we want to suggest any success metrics? So I'm looking for any ideas around evaluation criteria or success metrics. Greg suggests, I think a scorecard is needed, but geography, course and fine, should only be one aspect. Anyone else? Jeff, please go ahead. Thanks.
Yeah, sure. I think this is one of those areas where we can punt in the preliminary report. Once we have a better idea of what the program should look like, I think that's when you can start developing those metrics. Not that I'm in favor of punting questions, but pushing them off later. but it's kind of hard to come up with a with metrics before you have a design of the program. Although you do want to achieve a certain goal, so I would say that that could be one of the questions we put in the preliminary report once we have some more recommendations. But I do think, as Trang says, we should have an overall goal of what the applicant support program is, and then ask people what, you know, in the preliminary report, ask the community for what metrics could be used to measure that overall goal.
Thanks, Jeff. I know, talking to different people, one of the metrics that was suggested is just the sheer number of applications along with those who considered it and those who applied. So even those who considered it is a little bit of insight into the outreach efforts, into kind of the right, reaching the right people, I guess. Reading the chat, Antarctic TLD is not yet possible, but only a matter of time between technology and global warming. I might have missed this, but the objectives of the applicant support have been defined. I think I kind of put that out on the slides just to make sure it was clear. Katrin states, has the note-taking stopped? I actually haven't been paying attention to that, so if not, we'll have to go back and update it. So there's only a minute left. I didn't see any other business, but does anyone have anything that they would like to raise? I see people chatting, or typing, but nothing yet. I'd like to thank everyone for their time, and the last meeting of this year for WorkTrack 1 is on December 19th at 2000 UTC, and hopefully you can all join us there, and thank you for me trying to get through this. My language skills aren't so good after doing math all week long, so my apologies. And Emily says the notes are continuing. The text reached the capacity of the pod, so we're now on part two. Full notes will be sent out after the call. So thank you, everyone, and have a great rest of your day.
Thank you, everyone. Once again, the meeting has been adjourned. Please remember to disconnect all remaining lines and have a wonderful rest of your day.